I look forward to another one.
All right, let's see. Who is not here? Sandy Jacobson? Sarah Mattson? Joanne Davidson?
Here.
Who did I forget?
Sowell.
Elizabeth Sowell. Elizabeth.
Here.
Elizabeth Moore? Tatiana? They're supposed to be here. All right, well, I guess just for Phil, the neurobehavioral database, which I guess you guys have tried to upload data to, there were a couple out-of-range options, and they're going to fix that, and it should be available within the next few days.
Sounds good.
As far as I know, the behavioral data is ready to be uploaded from San Diego FinOps and from your place.
Yeah, we will do it in earnest starting 2 weeks from now.
Okay.
Ed, hi, I'm on. It's Michael.
Hey, Michael.
How are you doing?
Good, you?
Good.
My garage door broke last night, but other than that, I'm okay.
That's terrible.
Yeah. Got it
in paradise, huh?
Oh, they have lousy garage doors out here in California.
Well, it's because you don't have bad weather like we do.
All right, someone else just joined us.
Tatiana.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. All right, before we get on to the main mission, the only one I guess we're missing is Sandy and Joe, and I don't know if we heard back from them or not. Just a couple questions. A number of people on this phone call have volunteered to write articles, and we think that the offer that Charlie made about putting 3 or 4 articles in alcohol might be a good way to present the consortium and do those methodology papers, and then to have some other papers appear in other journals. And so we'll have to decide which methodology papers to try to feature for this one edition of alcohol. But I'm trying to get an idea of a timeline, since people have asked me, well, how quickly would I have to do this? And I would like to suggest that we aim for submissions.
Yes.
Any objections? All right, so then we'll just say June 15th so that we get them done before the RSA meeting. All right? And then I'll send out some emails, and we'll try to narrow down the focus of the articles, because some of them are pretty broad, and try to pick 3 or 4 as a group that we think should go in as a methodology type introduction of the consortium. The other issue that has come up is that some people in preparing these papers or preparing other research papers asked about when the alcohol use data would be available in any fashion, form, or whatever. And I really don't have an answer to that. I have not talked to Andy Aronson to see when that database would be up. Tina, do you have any idea on that?
No, I don't. It's not come up in our discussions.
So I'm not sure what data is available on the subjects in terms of how much alcohol frequently they were drinking, but it's an issue that I guess I'll have to discuss with Andy to see how quickly we can get at least part of that database up and functioning. People can enter data that they have. All right. Tatiana, does that work?
Yeah, I think it does work. I mean, yeah, it'll work. We'll make it work.
I mean, you're not the only one who had that issue. I mean,
yeah, I just think publishing without it is going to be very dicey.
Well, I think what you're going to do is you're going to be talking about FAS versus kids who don't have FAS. It's about the only thing you'll know without those alcohol data. I mean, the kids in San Diego, the controls in San Diego, have no exposure. But that's not true at some other sites. you know, and...
Do you think, Ed, do you think that Andy has the data on that? Because I thought the decision was to incorporate it into the dysmorphology exam form, that those additional questions, if I'm remembering right. So has everybody sent the data on it to Andy?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
That's, I think, one of the issues.
Yeah, I mean, don't you think reviewers are going to ask about this?
I mean, they do us when we send in, and you know, we talk about heavy exposure, and they want to know what that means. They don't usually ask about the control data.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, so I don't publish in this field. It just seems like people would want to know about the alcohol exposure, those controls.
Yeah, but I mean, we have in San Diego that we, you know, we exclude anybody who has any exposure. All right, but we can come back or deal with this by email. I'll talk to Andy and see where we are first.
I think that's the key thing.
Okay. So the major function of this call today is to discuss the possibilities for the renewal application, which will probably be the request for the RFA may go out in July or so. The application will be due in December. I sent out the opportunities that Ken Warren outlined in the NIAAA document that appear to be high priorities or areas in need of research and fit into the NIAAA mission. And what we need to start thinking about is how to organize the revised clinical part of the consortium and try to decide how we're going to include, exclude various projects, solicit new applications, and go from there. And I am open to suggestions. The basic science group talked yesterday and kind of broke down the possibilities into themes, and that was a diagnosis, which would include the identification of biomarkers, mechanisms and therapeutics, and developmental modifiers such as nutritional or genetic factors and interventions. And they were three central themes that the basic science group and thought might work as possibilities to develop translational research around. And I think that that's a key component, is to try to be able to integrate some of the clinical and the basic science projects. You know, I think that Tatiana and Feng Zhao sat nicely with the facial imaging data they showed in Rockville.
And actually, just to follow up on it, what we're doing now is we're doing a monthly meeting of our two cores together to try to make sure that that connection continues.
So I think that that's the type of thing that we should, you know, try to consider. I think there are lots of possibilities. So, you know.
Can somebody... Michael, from the basic science, can you tell me exactly what the diagnosis component of the basic science thing was?
Part of that was some of the overlap that we saw with Feng Zhou's study of the 3D imaging in mice as compared with the human study, looking for opportunities for improving diagnosis by using mouse models to show where we might look, both in terms of morphology and perhaps markers of exposure, and opportunities to validate findings in large groups of humans in mice studies, and the opportunity then to dissect out genetic components.
Okay. Sounds good. Sounds very good.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we need to think about who are the key players in and outside of this field that we may want to get involved in this project in the consortium, and what we think are where the opportunities exist, not necessarily within the projects that we're doing right now, but how those projects might interface with other people doing good work and want to try to incorporate them into our existing lines of research. So I'm open to all types of suggestions here.
Well, let me bring up the name of Carl Keene again.
Okay.
I think that he is an individual who can really benefit us in this project, particularly as the Basic Science Group have brought up as one of the themes being modifiers, genetics, and nutrition being the two of them. We desperately need somebody who is an expert in nutrition, particularly as it relates to prenatal nutrition and pregnancy outcome and stress.
That, like, involving Carl is how to integrate him in, or what he'd like to do into the sites. And I know that in my discussions with some people, there was some hesitancy about just letting anyone come in and do whatever they wanted at a particular group or population, that there would have to be some mechanism by which someone could propose a project that might be a subcontract or some way of getting a person with a good idea access to subjects. You know, I don't know if Moscow is willing to open up, you know, its database to collect bloods on kids for people to do whatever they choose to, the genetics or nutritional studies within that group of kids.
I think that our experience has been no, but it doesn't mean that what someone like Carl would propose to do couldn't be done in a little different way in that particular site. So if what the hypothesis was generated that required having to look at blood samples, in that setting the blood samples could be analyzed there, and maybe some other setting it would be different.
Mm-hmm. There clearly are people that Carl has worked with, for example, in Moscow, who he thinks are outstanding people in this field in Moscow. So it seems to me that the first thing, as far as somebody like Carl and somebody that we want to get in genetics and somebody that we want to get into biomarkers, et cetera, it seems to me the first thing is to get them on board to consult with us in terms of devising approaches to these issues.
Yeah, the downside of that is I think we need to pick the issues and then try to identify the people, or what we're going to do is invite a lot of people in and then not be able to accommodate their projects and have to tell them no.
I totally agree.
So, Ed, I think the issue that you bring up about how to access samples is going to apply to somebody you bring in on biomarkers as well.
Right.
That's the same problem, you know, with the Moscow group. Whatever biomarker development we were going to do, we would have to do there, at least as we see it right now. The person I mentioned to you that besides Cynthia Behrer, who I think has some novel ideas, is Friedrich Wurst, the guy from Switzerland. He's been working on biomarkers for alcohol, not in pregnant women, but in adults in general. So potentially he would be an interesting person to bring in for that part of it.
Yeah. Oh, I met and talked with him, and he has some interesting ideas and would like access to populations to test it on. The question is how do we go about trying to identify who's going to let us go in and do these things, their various groups? I mean, is all of these projects going to be a subcontracting for genetic studies and biomarker studies in Moscow or South Africa? Or how do you do this? What's the mechanism? But maybe that's not the first question. Maybe the first question is to try to decide on what are our themes and the major issues we're going to try to answer.
Agreed.
So, I'm open.
I agree.
Okay. All right. So,
the theme that was raised before as an emerging one and an important one is the whole idea of educational intervention and how to improve the performance of children with FASD.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that was one of the themes that the basic science projects were proposing, was interventions, and it'd be certainly not be educational interventions in the narrow sense, but...
Yeah, certainly.
I mean, does anyone see any interest in adding new sites onto the project?
Well, I would like UCLA to be added.
Yeah, no, I meant besides.
Okay.
I think that that's...
But it's not part of...
It's not right there now, and I think that, you know, we will have to, as that project develops, is to talk to the Dysmorphology Corps to mm-hmm. find out how we can get those kids seen by one of the dysmorphologists.
Right.
I think an equally important question is whether we should be narrowing the number of sites to the ones that have been most productive and to concentrate efforts in a smaller number of sites.
Yeah, and I think that's an important... I mean, I've been thinking about this quite a bit and trying to think of whether we would do well with smaller grants and more of them. Fewer sites and more subcontracts within a site. Just various ways of trying to look at this. You know, I think that I know in looking over the administrative core, I would try to make it as a cluster and put the pilot projects into it to try to conserve resources. I don't see the neurobehavioral core needing much of a budget next time. Can things, now that we have the dysmorphology identified, can we run more projects, at smaller budgets, or I don't know.
Isn't part of the question, what you want to target as the questions you want to address in the coming cycle? I mean, who has the right samples for the questions you want to address? Isn't that partly what needs to
be addressed? It can be addressed.
Pardon?
And that can be addressed, not only want to.
But it can be addressed. I mean, I guess, Where do you want to go? What do you see as the big questions that you want that are going to tie this consortium together for the next application? Does that make sense? I mean, that's sort of a big picture thing. But I think once you have that framework, then you can go and say, so do the sites we have, which of these sites, is it all of them, some of them will help us meet those goals? Is there an obvious hole, a certain kind of sample, a certain exposure that we don't have that we need to bring in? Do we need certain numbers in more of certain numbers, and where could we get those? I mean, I think you need that before you can decide, how many you need and all that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I know it's kind of big picture, but I think that's where we want to be, 6 months out from the grant. Where do we want to go with this project?
Yeah. I agree with Tatiana, and I think a good starting point would be the four themes of the basic science group to frame some questions around those.
And they really, I think, cover the issues that we are interested in as far as, and the questions that we are interested in answering.
Themes.
That's a good starting point.
All right, so are we in agreement that it would be good to include some work on biomarkers from both the basic science and clinical perspectives?
I agree.
Absolutely. Biomarkers are critical.
All right, so everyone, that sounds like a good... Now,
are you looking at something? I'm sorry. Do you have some kind of a summary sheet that you're all looking at that has that report or something?
No.
Okay.
We just wrote them down when
okay. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought there was some handout that I'm sitting here trying to find. I'm sorry.
You didn't get it and read it? Just to show you how much everybody reads, within one of the documents that was distributed to most people, not everybody, but people involved in behavior, there is a thing that if you read it, do something, you win a prize. No one has won the prize. No one has read it yet. It's over a month old. So, all right. but I'm embedding things into messages to see whether or not anyone reads them.
They have to be listening to you singing a song at the same time backwards or something?
Maybe. All right, so within the biomarkers, the people who have access to clients that are on the phone in Moscow, South Africa, the Finns aren't on, who is likely to be able to contribute subjects for a study of biomarkers? Does that make sense?
It
depends upon what
kind of a marker it is.
Kind of biomarker.
Yeah. What type of materials you need, and what may have already been gathered in some of these populations.
Right.
And you already have a biomarker. That's the face.
So, blood, hair, and urine, I guess, would be.
And meconium, I think,
meconium.
Also.
I was thinking meconium. I mean, I was thinking meconium, so it depended on what age group you were doing.
Yeah, well, the blood and the hair are all from, well, the blood is, and the urine are from both from pregnant women.
Right. Is anyone collecting any of that now?
Just blood for us. We're not getting hair or urine.
So we are getting blood on pregnant women.
All right, so blood in Moscow. But that blood cannot leave Moscow.
So far.
What kind of tube? What are you collecting when you say blood?
Collecting 25 cc's of blood 2 times during pregnancy.
Moscow only, or also in the Ukraine?
No blood. In Ukraine.
No blood. Okay, so that's just in Moscow.
What kind of tube, I guess, is what I'm getting at?
Oh,
DNA from it, or what do you got in the tube?
Are you saving it as serum or plasma?
That's what I'm asking.
It's being divided into aliquots, and some of it is being held back for the DNA analysis.
Okay, good. Okay.
It's being used for nutritional analysis, and some of it is being used to look at the three biomarkers that we're looking at right now, which are the traditional ones.
Okay.
Thanks. All right, so basically, Moscow is the only prospective study that's ongoing where we can get any maternal measures from that.
We have proposed in South Africa a prospective study. Right now, in terms of collecting blood, we only have a very small nested study of 200 women there, but we will be doing prospective work with 8,000 to 10,000 South African women.
So, Bill, I think that's going to be a key population.
Yeah.
Along with the past population, that's going to be a key population.
Oh, wait a minute. This is Faye Calhoun. Let me ask you something. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. You've got three themes for the basic science: diagnosis, mechanism and therapeutics, and interventions, right?
Right.
Okay. Do you want to carry the same themes over to the clinical?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that.
Okay. All right. Once you carry those over, the question is, what are the questions that the field needs answered under each one? And second, what data do you already have, in palette, from the current studies that contributes to those, right under each one? If you say diagnostics, what is it that has been found, and what further questions need to be answered? And once you get that laid out for each one of those themes, then you figure out the populations that you need for this, because you've got the kids coming out of the past study, as well as perhaps some information from field study and some leftover populations.
Also, Italy is quite interested in a prospective study as part of the consortium.
Yeah. What has the, under each of those themes, if you lay out what has been accomplished, what the findings are by theme from basic science, and how they may need to be translated into clinical science and back and forth. Understand that Feng Zhao has determined a way of looking at the placenta and he has some changes there. So the question in basic science would be, do we need to follow up on that in another animal model like the sheep? Because we can't do it in the human.
Why can't we?
Actually, it is being done in the human.
Yeah, drunk human? I'm talking about alcohol abusing.
Yeah.
Right.
Drunk human? You have that data?
No, we don't have the data, but a prospective study allows you to look at that.
In real time.
Well, what's that say?
In real time with a BAC?
No.
No, I don't think so.
No, I think you're right.
Okay, so then we need a sheep.
All right, well, in terms of the biomarker, though, basically there are no ongoing projects in the consortium other than the dysmorphology core is looking at the face of the biomarkers, Ken said, that's looking at any chemical aspect or a marker of exposure that could be used.
Well, we are in Moscow, but the expectation is they're not going to be very effective.
And that's what worst, the guy from Switzerland, right?
No, worst. Pavel Logurtsov is doing biomarkers for us, and we haven't introduced any novel ones at all. We're getting saliva, doing MCV, GGT, and CDT, but not getting urine, hair, or any other biological samples.
So if we moved into the biomarkers, it would be a new area for us. We'd have to identify the individuals. But everybody thinks that that's an important aspect of moving forward in the consortium and something that we could do. Or did I misinterpret that?
No, I think that's what everybody's saying.
Okay. In terms of the diagnosis, which was the other area that the basic came out of the first one of the basic science. What are the critical questions that need to be examined there, and what are the data that we already have that can help do that, and what more do we need to collect? I think it's like as Faye was saying, right, Faye?
Right. I mean, you've already tested the camera. Do you need to do that some more? Have measures of dysmorphology papers and a couple of populations you can compare that. What else do you need, you know, and diagnose? You got the neurobehavioral assessments.
Yeah, I think we need to do more with the neurobehavioral phenotype.
Oh, yeah, I without looking at the data or knowing what the data are yet, I think on their first neurobehavioral approach, it was to throw out a very broad net and
right.
See what differences, and now that once we see what the data look like, we can narrow that net down and make it finer so that we catch more things. And I think that's an important component to continue with.
And we do a better job of differentiating between different levels of exposure or exposure and no exposure.
Right.
I think that's all we're doing right now is trying to eliminate a number of tests so that we can move into the ones that have the best promise.
Right.
Do you have all the age groups you need?
No.
Behavior.
The major age group that's missing is the newborn.
And that's what's going to come
out. And that's what's going to come out of the prospective studies.
The Phil study, too.
And the past study.
Right.
But it comes out of the past. It also comes out of Phil's study. And
hopefully it's going to come out of this global network study if we get that funded through NICHD.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, that would be, you know, I think that's a good approach to figure out what population you need. Do you need any more information from those that have already been collected on Wave 3 from Wellington?
Ah.
Or from the orphanages in Russia? You need comparative data between the FAS kids and the other kids.
Yeah, I think I think we can ask some questions about the 6-7-year-old kids in terms of diagnosis that can be innovative and very important. Things like the data that we had from our pilot from the pilot data that we had looking at palpebral fissure length as it relates on the physical examination to abnormalities in brain structure shown on the MRI. And we have shown, at least in the pilot data, some significant correlation between palpebral fissure length on the physical exam and specific areas of brain abnormalities, structural abnormalities on MRI. So I think that that would be a really innovative thing to look at. I think this, so that would obviously take 6 to 8 year old kids or older. Other issues that I think would be important to look at in the, from the standpoint of diagnosis in 6 to 8 year olds is looking at this lingular frenulum that I have been particularly interested in. And I've had a number of discussions with the people at Indiana that have been working on these computer things about how to measure the frenulum. And this is something that they're very interested in and they are talking about, and that we are going to get back together again, hopefully before we arrive at the meeting in July. Carl has come up with some, I think, very interesting things to do in terms of metabolomics in 6 to 8 year old kids that have been diagnosed as the alcohol syndrome. So I think there's still some very, very interesting things to do with the 6 to 8 year old kids and older than that as well that I would like to propose as part of the dysmorphology, whatever you want to call it, core, or whatever you want to call it for the next go around.
As far what Fay was talking about, what we would do with the older kids too. I don't know if Tatiana feels like there's enough variability and range in the facial imaging data that you have in terms of the age range of kids that have had the 3D photos taken and the race ethnic distribution and the range of alcohol exposure and so on.
So let me give you filling in a little bit. So we're meeting now pretty regularly. So we're going through all the images that we have and going through obviously the clear FAS and the clear control, sort of taking out all the questionable kids in the middle that we're not sure about, and looking at the demographics. Remember, what we showed at NIAAA was just 100 kids, and we have more data. So what we're trying to do is maximize and use all the data that we have from alcohol, you know, FAS kids and control kids. So I think we're going to know a clear sense of what our demographics is, all that's being uploaded, and we're clarifying whether or not we're missing some data on some kids. But I would say in about a week or two, we'll be able to say exactly what our age range is to see how the holds look, because we did have some concerns at the NIAAA meeting about whether or not we had good evaluation across the ages. Certainly in South Africa right now, we're just doing this narrow age. That's the only data we have. We don't have older kids in South Africa. We just had 6 to 8. In Finland, we only had older ones. So what we were looking at, and some of the holes are still going to be there. The other thing I just want to bring up in response to what Fay had said earlier was we're actually trying to work with and get a demo handheld camera and collect some data with that. It would give us a lot more flexibility in the field, and we're hoping would give us the ability to do imaging in very young children, which is really very difficult right now with the current setup that we have with the existing camera. And so I would actually argue that if we can get a population that's willing to let us do it with a handheld camera like that, we could actually go into potentially newborn nurseries or very, very young children. And that's something we were hoping to be able to propose if we can find the right samples in the renewal. That would be one of the ages we would go into, and I think would be particularly amenable to the frenulum studies that Ken was discussing. Because that's one of the issues of doing that right now with the technology we have, don't you think?
Oh, yes.
Whereas a handheld would give you a lot more flexibility, the angles at which you could go in at and stuff. So just so you have a sense of that. So I'm a little bit punting, but because I don't have definite numbers in front of me, but I think that I will have a much better sense, and I'm almost certain there are going to be holes across the races and across the ages that are going to need to be filled.
Yeah, I'm going to
help at all.
I'm going to talk on a big picture thing.
But I see, like, the facial imaging, some of the data that came out there where they were identifying parts of the face that may be more affected than other parts
mm-hmm.
in alcohol exposure. The availability of to look at this in a mouse model.
Oh, absolutely.
And then the availability of taking the mouse model and looking at it in terms of a mechanistic to find out what cells are being knocked off, what relationship do they have to certain brain areas development, and then doing and kind of coming around big circle to go from the face to the basic science to identifying where cells are getting knocked off and how that influences brain development to the brain imaging stuff.
I mean, absolutely. The way we see that loop, I mean, it's exactly the way you're describing, is that we have the existing dysmorphology. We can take it to anthropometric measurements, take it off of a camera, which potentially gives you, you know, another way to sort of existing measures. Now you have the ability with some of the stuff that Jeffrey and Shafin are doing to identify parts of the face that we never thought to look at or potentially weren't measuring the volumes or the arcs on those. Flip it into the animal model, look if you see the same findings. And one thing we can do in the animal that you can't do in the human is the timing of the exposure. In theory, we should be able to do it in the human, but in the mouse, you can get really tight regulation on that. So you can look at amount and timing and look at that those effects as well. So I would actually layer that in there as well. So that's why our two cores are actually meeting so tightly together. We're trying to get this whole thing so it becomes a tight application that ties our two parts together.
I mean, I think that's a great project, you know. And,
so, I mean, you and I have talked about that. You know, what are we best suited as a core? Should we be trying to go in together? You know, we're very flexible as far as what mechanism we use in this renewal. But we see these two parts as really being sort of, they have to be locked together in the renewal.
Diana, what two cores, again, are you talking about?
Talking about facial imaging core, and I guess Shaofen, he's really a basic science project. I don't know what you'd call him. I mean, I guess I don't know, is he a core or a project, whatever you call him, but he's the basic science project. So we're trying to basically lock these two together so that we are talking to each other, what we're testing in the human, you know, we'll have Fungzo directly testing in the mouse and informing each other back and forth. I mean, that's how we see a renewal.
I think that's great. I think that's great. And by the way, the thing about the handheld, you know, and getting a population, we'll get a population. I'm not concerned about that.
Okay, I just wanted to give it to us. It gives us exposure. Not exposure is probably a poor choice of words right now, but gives us the ability to image in a population we could not do before and something we can uniquely do. I mean, we just don't want to be doing the same thing over again. We want to kind of move the envelope, and we see very young children as part of that envelope and really making sure we've spread race well analyzed and the effects of age and what's happening in the face.
And in terms of projects versus cores, you know, I don't think we need to make that decision now, but I think we, and it was pointed out, we're too heavy on cores. And I think we should try to have more projects, fewer cores, and the cores should be kind of mean and lean. You know, unless we're going to be collecting and can guarantee collecting bloods and we need to send them to this core group, you know, I don't think we need to have these big, large cores like we've had. I'd rather see them as a project that they could go out and do things rather than just supply a service.
That makes sense.
Then, all right, let's see. And I'm assuming that everybody who's here wants to continue on this thing. But if anyone wants out... all right, so, you know, I think we've talked about the diagnosis and the dysmorphology and how we can integrate that maybe with the basic science through this facial imaging. Some of the nutritional interventions, I think, can go across both the clinical and the basic science projects. I think we need to identify what the questions are and then decide who we'd like to bring in on those. You know, there are lots of papers, papers coming out now on vitamin supplementations of various types. But, I think we need to identify what the question is. And so that's kind of today's open discussion, is what are the big things that we need to answer? I think I'm losing everybody here.
I mean, to me, isn't one of our goals to be able to beyond potentially dysmorphology, identify kids who are have been exposed to alcohol and have significant, what's the word I want?
Cognitive behavioral.
Yeah, I mean, deficits that are perhaps not as obvious in the face, but that are going to be, I mean, it's sort of the touchy-feely part, but they're obviously going to be affecting their life. And right now, those kids are difficult to identify. You know, there's a lot of concern about how to identify them if you can't see the face, if you can't document the alcohol exposure. So I thought one of our goals is to be able to improve our ability to discriminate within that group of kids.
Absolutely true.
Yeah, and I think you got to keep that big picture. I mean, we sat in our group meeting and said, we haven't even tackled in everything we're doing the most interesting part of our study, which is all the kids in the middle.
Right.
We all agreed that we had to first prove that we could do the extremes and separate them before we could argue that we could do anything in the middle. So it's sort of a piecemeal, but I think the renewal has to be focused on that.
Well, I think it will in terms of the neurobehavioral site or the sites that are already collecting neurobehavioral data. It's going to be deciding what new neurobehavioral data to collect at those sites.
But think beyond that. That's where your biomarkers and all these other things might be really useful, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking. So I think it's beyond, you know, just the things that we normally think of. But are there other things that, as we go in this renewal, we collect that we may realize are incredibly valuable in distinguishing these kids out? I don't know. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that middle group that we've called deferred is the by far the most interesting group. I think, though, that to really answer the questions that you're posing, Tatiana, you require a prospective ascertainment. We need to know from early pregnancy or as early as possible about alcohol exposure, and then we need to follow those women with biomarkers, and we need to then see them in the newborn period and diagnose some with the full-blown fetal alcohol syndrome and others with not a single feature, and some with subtle features, and then follow them to see how they do from a neurobehavioral standpoint. And that's really going to be the critical issue in terms of answering the questions that I think are most important.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean,
What's not to agree with?
Wait, I mean, how could you not agree with something so eloquent?
Yeah, I think it's tough to get at the questions that you are asking from what we've got so far.
I agree. I mean, I'm big picture. I'm a big picture gal, so I'm. I haven't told you how to do it yet.
The problem is that the prospective studies take a lot of time, and they're not inexpensive, and we already have populations that. We have access to that maybe we can start to answer or at least provide enough context so that the prospective studies are better focused in.
Oh, I agree. I totally agree.
I don't think anyone's arguing with you about the value of the prospective studies, but I think there are now going to be a few of those going on, and we plan on taking advantage of them. But we still have these populations that we do have some useful data on, and we should utilize.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I think the other thing that you can think of is, you know, as you're thinking about, you know, facial imaging, what's going on, and the idea that you can take that embryo and look at what's going on potentially in different populations of cells. I mean, you can make that link if you end up expanding, which I think you are, some of the brain imaging, that those are great tie-ins as well. I mean, that's less perhaps clinical relevance. That's going back to basic science and what drives the phenotype you see. You know, understanding what is it that contributes to the phenotype, that contributes to this fetal alcohol syndrome phenotype? What's happening in the brain?
Yeah, and in terms of that, Elizabeth Sal and Chikatilo has identified an individual, South African, who can assist in imaging studies there and is willing to coordinate and travel between the sites.
Right.
It's just a matter of trying to identify a population in South Africa that we could image.
Right, so then we could have L.A., San Diego, South Africa,
and maybe
perhaps Finland.
Right.
Are you interested in Italy for a prospective study?
Absolutely.
What age population are you looking for in terms of imaging?
Well, you know, we're doing normal kids as young as 5 right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
With the alcohol-exposed kids, we've started at age 7. We might be able to do younger in kids who are not severely cognitively affected, but we're starting at age 7, just because of movement artifacts and that sort of thing. So 7 through adolescence would be an age range that I would target.
So, I mean, it's...
You need a MRI machine to do this, right, Elizabeth?
Well, I don't understand the question.
Well, are there any other imaging, brain imaging studies that can help you as far as these issues?
I still don't understand the question. I mean, does the data already exist?
No.
No.
To look at different populations, you need to look at them with an MRI machine. We're not talking about other kinds of imaging.
Oh, I understand now. Well, it depends on the question. I mean, I think, you know, that obviously Fred has done some work on ultrasound and some, you know, it depends on the question. I mean, I think if you're looking at, you know, discriminating kids with and without in a really quick and dirty, cheap way that any clinician could use, you would take a very different approach than if you're really looking at how little we know about the human prenatal alcohol-exposed brain. I think that you might, at this point, still be casting quite a broad net, right? So in other words, instead of thinking that we're at a point that we can focus on some small region that we could do quickly and cheaply and in clinically, I don't think we're there yet. I think we need to get some really detailed looks at really high resolution images of the brain. That's my bias. Does that make sense? So high resolution structural MRI is going to get you a lot more in terms of really finely analyzing cortical, subcortical structures than ultrasound or CT or functional imaging. Does that make sense?
Well, I think they serve two different purposes, as you just said.
Mm-hmm.
One is a clinical screening tool, and the other is getting at the neurobiology.
Yeah, but my point is I think that we need to do better at getting at the neurobiology in you know, looking in a very detailed way before we know where to focus on a quick and dirty diagnostic. That's my bias. Anyway.
Michael, Elizabeth, what do you think of these brain electrical activity mapping techniques? Are they something worth pursuing or no?
I honestly, probably any sort of cutting-edge imaging technology in this population would help.
I mean, there are reports that 50% of these kids have abnormal EEGs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that can be a slippery slope. EEG data sometimes is like genotyping, mm-hmm. Or array analysis. You end up with something that looks a little different. You do something like power analysis and analyze components at different frequencies and so on. But you're not that much further ahead except to say that they're different and they're not necessarily going to be specifically different. I think in terms of other kinds of functional assessments, MEG is useful, but you have to have a specific question that you're answering, some question about function, that you're going to use MEG for its high spatial resolution to help resolve in a way that you can't maybe do as well for its high spatial and temporal resolution that you can't do as well with some of the other imaging modalities. But I haven't heard a specific question. I don't think we're far enough ahead where we would say we really want to know over the course of a few seconds how a child's brain reacts differently if they've had prenatal ethanol exposure in a particular task. Maybe it's solving arithmetic or some other thing that people have looked at. It would be useful there, but I'm leery of power analysis as a way of either providing diagnostic information or mechanistic information about what might be different in kids who have been exposed to alcohol.
And then the other one is Amen's SPECT. You know, if you talk to parent groups, you know, some parent will always come up to you afterwards and say, look, my child was diagnosed by Dr. Amen as having FAS. And
SPECT is just a sort of a poor person's pet.
Right, exactly. But he has a signature profile for FAS. If you ever have a chance, you should look at his website.
Uh-huh. What, has he published anything?
Yeah.
Not on FAS.
Yeah.
But he charges, you know, I think $3,000 to $4,000 to do this, and parents go there and they get these brain diagnosis of FAS, but the kid has no facial characteristics or whatever.
How do you spell his name?
A M M O N, I think. I'll send you a link to his website. He's up in Los Angeles, I think, right? Elizabeth?
I have no clue.
Okay. I'll find him and send him. All right, well, we have like a few minutes left, and so I'm going to make a suggestion that came up yesterday. And that's basically to start emailing amongst ourselves suggestions about the types of projects that would lend themselves to the resources that we already have, and to go into translational research. And it takes advantage of the patients, the biological samples that we might be able to get, and just start sending them around to people to get some ideas. And then identifying people that might be associated with the particular projects that people think would be worthwhile.
Leave a message on my phone.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
All right. So everybody should have everybody's email on the top of those ones that we've sent out so far. And we should try to maybe think about that over the next week or so, and then reconvene and see if we can narrow things down a little bit.
I missed what you just said at the very end.
Oh, hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Didn't know you were there.
Oh, they gave my name in the beginning. It was, you know, maybe.
They don't announce it on this conference call.
I thought they did.
No, this is
anyway.
Tape, just for the tape. So yesterday the basic science group met, and they kind of.
No, I heard everything. It was just the very, very last thing you said I missed.
Oh, okay, about, you mean how to start sending out emails?
Oh, okay, I know how to do that.
No, and dealing with the questions that the basic science group just brought up yesterday on their conference call, and to try to suggest the types of projects that would be translational and utilize the samples that we have, and ideas to bringing in new research ideas into this consortium. All right, so if we could start doing that and then maybe try to set up another call in about a week and a half, 2 weeks,
good,
depending upon how much response we get to this.
Sounds good.
All right, everybody okay with that?
Yeah.
Any other comments?
No.
All right. Well, we'll see how far that goes and how many emails we each get. So take care, and I will be in touch.
Thanks,
Ed.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.